How's it going, Emil?
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Alexco. GPE will be joining us. I don't know if
I'm with the GPE, and my colleague Esha Kekilemi will be joining us later.
When I give you a time to introduce all of yourself, because I saw the ministry guide, I didn't know that GPE is here. You will tell us who you are, what your role in GPE is, what the role of your colleague is, because normally when we invite GPE, we expect the DG. So there is a bit of clarification that you need to do to us. What role you are playing in GPE and why, you know? I was actually still speaking, then I saw your hand and thought. I want to welcome Alexco and everybody else. I want to welcome members of the committee. I want to welcome representatives of the ministry at GPE. So it looks like only two people from GPE will be coming. We will need an explanation from you people as to what's happening. But let us do this. Let's do quick introductions. I'm Faithy, chairperson of the committee. I'll let my members introduce themselves, then we move to Alexco, and then GPE, what GPE is, will be with that explanation. Thanks.
My name is Dr. Shiva Pillai. I'm a member of the portfolio committee.
Chris Gololo, member of the committee. Morning, my name is Dr. Lonnie van Dijk, member of the committee.
My name is Peter van Dalen, I'm a member of the committee.
Mr. Mangen, member of the committee.
Gloria Bowman, member of the committee.
Fatima Hajjaj, member of the committee.
Tony Grover, Alexco.
Peter van Zijl, Alexco.
Reginald Mazaru, chairperson of Alexco.
Ketiwe Maseko, CEO of Alexco.
I'm BTC Abunera, ex-minister of GPE.
Sir Maduana, GPE.
My name is Anthony Kamungoma. I'm chief director in the Department of Public Enterprises. I'm responsible for Alexco.
Asamu Lodo, advisor to the minister.
Karen Polka, the researcher for the portfolio committee.
Disamu Jimmy, the committee secretary.
No sense. I am happy that you are responsible for Alexco. The clarity I needed was whether you will speak on the item in the on the agenda that is the item that GPE should present on. So clearly, you are here for on a different mission. You are here on a mission of Alexco. Could you clarify that, please?
Yes, Chairperson. I'm here on the presentation of Alexco annual results. My colleague Eshla Fikilepi, DDG, will be joining us to address the second matter.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thanks. And we can't say she's late because that matter is the second matter. But it's strange that only one person is coming on such an involved agenda item, which is, but we will tease her when she comes. You are not the person to answer questions around it. I want to particularly welcome all of you, heartily, especially extend a warm welcome to Madam Hajjaj, who is representing us in the Pan-African Parliament. I want to inform you that we understand that we have a standing apology in this committee. So whenever the Pan-African Parliament is sitting, your apology will. So you don't have to worry. We are very happy to have you back. And we also know that you often do a lot of international relations as well. So we missed you. We are happy you are back. Thank you. On the agenda today is the annual report of Alexco. Maybe I should start by apologizing to Alexco, because we should have done this weeks ago in Alexco. In what do you call that place again?
Alexander
Bay. In the Rural Escape, we don't say Bay, we say Bay. Yeah. we had asked for a permission to visit the community there as part of our oversized visit. And for a while it looked like we would be granted permission, and on the last minute we were told no, we can only utilize next week. So we felt that in terms of the PFMA and the rules of parliament, we can, and then also because we're inconveniencing you so badly, we could not further postpone your annual report presentation. So we decided to slot you in. We cost you a lot of failure to get permission to go to to Alexander Bay. Cost you a lot of time and money, and we want to apologize for that, because we know that you had to fly hoping that you would meet us there, and only on, you always fly from Johannesburg to Cape Town. Only when you were in Cape Town did you learn that we actually, a day before we were to take off, were not granted permission to leave. Our sincere apologies for the cost incurred, for the time wasted, and for the inconvenience, and for the delayed presentation of the annual report. It was outside the control of the committee. I hope you accept our apologies.
We do indeed, Madam Chairman.
Thank you very much. I will leave it entirely to you how you present to us. I understand that it might be that the chairperson will do the first preliminary remarks, followed by the CEO and then the CFO. We want to request you that we have pressures of time. So we would appreciate it if you would be sensitive to the time constraints that we have, apart from the DPE presentation, which could be very involving, and the interaction therein. We also need a bit of housekeeping to do, because we are living on an oversight trip. We need to discuss that and a bit of housekeeping issues amongst ourselves. So we'll ask you to be aware of our time constraints. Dr. You want to say something?
No, I'm happy, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say, you know, in line that we ask all SOEs, we are saying an SOE is not just a normal company that is presenting a profit and loss statement. It's a government state-owned enterprise, and it has got a broader mandate of transforming society, enriching the values of the people, and that's why the government makes the investment. When presenting to us, please tell us the other things that you do just as a differentiator. Like, we were very interested in SAA's Express Mark 1 and Mark 2 pilot training program, and how it's running and how they are doing things about bringing about engineers and others. Because when we make an investment into a state-owned enterprise, we're doing that conscious that we are mandating you to transform lives and change.
But feel free to present to us the way you have prepared. If there are outstanding issues that we put before you in the form of questions, you will send a reply to us. Thank you. Yes, sir?
Chairperson, may I just ask you for a ruling till what time Alex Corp will have corrective space surgery? Stick to that before we kick off with the DP.
I'm
the times I have in my mind are very poor. So we will see with time. I was anticipating when we developed this agenda, I was anticipating that we will give you 45 minutes to present, and we'll engage you for 45 minutes. But if you can spare us some minutes out of that 45 minutes, we will appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson and members of the committee. I think we're, that will jump straight into the presentation. We felt that it would be important to set some context in terms of where Alexco is as part of the process of presenting the annual report so that there's a full understanding of some of the issues and challenges that we're facing and how that results then in and translates into our financial results. In terms of the presentation that I'm going to be looking at, I will be focusing largely on the key strategic issues that we're facing and the key deliverables that are a requirement for us as Alexco. And my colleague and CEO, Katira Maseko, will then look at some of the operational items. And Dani Khobla, who's in the capacity of our Chief Financial Officer, will then deliver the actual annual report itself. If we then sort of run straight into the key strategic items, essentially with the land settlement process that Alexco has been through, a lot of our key deliverables from a strategic intent perspective were around delivering on the transfer of the various assets that were part of the settlement, largely the farms and agricultural assets that were involved in the process. We also were required to look at the conversion of our old order mineral rights into new order mineral rights and then transferring those to the community in, as far as the land was concerned. And then we're looking at transferring the old order mineral rights in terms of the marine mining, which would be retained as assets within Alexco, which would then be combined into a pooling and sharing joint venture on a 51%, 49% basis, with 51% being held by Alexco and 49% being held by the community, and that pooling and sharing joint venture would then be operated by an independent board and management committee on behalf of Alexco and the community for the benefit of both Alexco and the community. We then had a number of issues that then flowed from that in terms of updating our environmental plans, looking at social and labor plans as part of the longer-term process of how our mining processes as the PSJV would impact on the area. And then, obviously, internally, we also had some restructuring issues that we had to look at from an operational perspective at the Alexco. In terms of our status at this point in time, from an operational perspective, up to March 2009, we experienced a loss of 77.6 million rand versus a budgeted loss of 32.1 million. In the first quarter, or sorry, in terms of March 2010, we then are looking at a budgeted loss of 32 million, and in our first quarter we of the 2010 year, we experienced just under 3 million profit, which was, I guess, largely due to some unexpected goodwill in terms of revenues that arose, and also we managed to manage some of our expenses a little bit better. In sort of coming back to the loss of 77.6 million, a large portion of that relates to adjustments that we had to do in terms of post-retirement medical aid benefits, and that's something that we will come back to as a discussion of one of the challenges that we're facing. From a restructuring process, we went through a process where we had to go through some voluntary severance packages as part of the process, because aside from the fact that we're experiencing huge declines in terms of our prices of diamonds, we also were going into a process where we effectively had to seize quite a substantial portion of our land mining activities in order to preserve the future value that was supposed to be garnered by the community as part of the process going forward. So that's required that we go through some legal processes that needed to be concluded as part of the land claim settlement process, and in the interim we effectively had to hold in abeyance our operations to make sure that the community did not feel that we're stripping the future value that they would benefit from. That process of voluntary severance packages has been completed, and we've effectively gone from around about 240 odd employees to currently about 111 staff complement at this point in time. From the land mining activity, as a consequence of that, we then put our operations into care and maintenance, where effectively we have limited processing of dumps There is no new mining that is happening in virgin areas at this point in time on the mine. And the issue with doing the cane maintenance and the limited processing of dumps is to make sure that we have some revenue to keep our maintenance of the equipment and plant that is on the premises going. We operate in a fairly harsh environment with sand and obviously rust from the ocean. So if that plant and machinery stands still, it goes into disuse very quickly. So we need to keep it ticking over as part of the process. We then looked at transfer of the agricultural assets, and all the farms and maricultural assets were completed at the beginning of last year, and effectively we moved on from there. Some of the other items that we had to go through was queries around Competition Commission. In the end of the process, we found that the transaction was not notifiable, which made our process a little bit easier. And obviously, from a regulatory point, we are in compliance with those acts that are listed. The process around the conversion of mining rights, we did manage to make submissions of the various applications before April of this year, and we now are awaiting a response from the Department of Minerals and Energy. We understand that typically the minimum time frames for responses from the department is about 8 to 10 months, and we are now in the latter part of that time frame, and we have been working quite closely with the Department of Minerals and Resources to get as speedy a response as possible, because this is quite a key outstanding issue in terms of our land claim settlement process with the community. One of the other things that we had to do as part of the process is that previously the township was built and developed by Alexco, and obviously as part of the land settlement process, we now had to make sure that we established proper earthen for the township, got it subdivided, and then registered and established as a formal township for transfer then to the local authorities within the area. Part of that process requires that we do significant upgrade of some of the facilities around water, the electrical, reticulation, etc. And that process is undergoing at this point in time as a key project with a view to transferring those assets to the local relevant local authorities within the course of 2010. I think I've still talked about, in terms of then rushing through and looking at what are some of the outstanding items from the land claim process, the PSJV or Pooling and Sharing Joint Venture implementation is still outstanding because there are a number of conditions precedent that still need to be fulfilled, the largest one being the finalization of the conversion and transfer of the mineral rights to the community. The second item that is, I guess, a major issue from an Alexco perspective is then to review and look at what is the future of Alexco going forward once the PSJV is established, whether Alexco then looks at mining concessions in other minerals, whether we look at diamond mining activity in terms of other areas in the surrounding region, and all that is, I guess, at this point in somewhat of an abeyance, but is part of the process of the various challenges that we're grappling with as an Alexco board. Some of the other key issues that then flow from that is, obviously, with the status of the fiscus at this point in time, we have been advised quite clearly that there is no funding that is going to be coming to state-owned assets or at this point in time, so that is something that we're grappling with in terms of how do we establish a new strategic vision with perhaps limited access to funding. We then also have, as a key issue that we need to look at, some environmental rehabilitation liability challenges. We face approximately 250 odd million rand of environmental damage that has been done as part of the 50-60 odd years of mining that Alexco has done, which as part of the establishment of the pooling and sharing joint venture is an issue that would need to be resolved between ourselves and DPE as a critical issue. We also then have, as part of our previous employment practices, quite significant liabilities that arise in terms of post-retirement and specifically postage time and medical aid, which are also of the similar order of magnitude, around about 180 to 200 odd million rand, which is an issue that we also need to resolve as part of our strategic issues that we're facing going forward. The last item in terms of some of the challenges that we're facing is that as part of the land claim process, we do have some outstanding compensation for land that we are in the process of discussing with the Land Commissioner and the Department of Land Affairs at this point in time. As a broad outline, that concludes my presentation.
Thank you. May you
thank you, Madam Chair, ladies and gentlemen. Okay. I will try and be as brief as possible and try not to repeat in any way what's been covered. I'd just like to give a short overview of some of the operational issues at Alex Corp. I think it would be important just to get a bit of background. And I think also even prior to your visit, your site visit, I think it will help to understand what's happening on the ground. These are the issues I'm going to touch on. Current structure, land contracting, employees, etc. If we look at the current Alex Corp structure at the moment, the core operations, we have Alexander Bay Mining, which at the beginning of the financial year, the company's land mining operations were restructured. Our own land mining teams were put on hold, and as the chair mentioned, we actually have very, very limited mining happening on land. We have a little bit of mining of tailings and dumps, and a couple of groups. There's a women's group and a development foundation group in another area, but that's not actually part of the resource that's destined to go into the joint venture with the community. So the land mining production has been very, very limited on land. We currently have, on the marine side, we have 27 shallow water contractors, and there are about 400 or so divers in these operations. Over 400 divers. And these are under 27 contractors. So that continues as the marine operations continue as usual, but I'll go ahead and also take you through some of the challenges we face there. But let me continue. So that's the structure. So that's the core operations. And then the non-core operations would be the farms. And those have been successfully transferred to the community in terms of as a requirement of the deed of settlement. The land claim settlement with the Richtersveld community. All the farms were transferred to the Richtersveld community, and they're no longer on Alex Corp's books. And these farms include the dairy, ostrich, citrus farms, and mariculture. Okay, just to give a little bit of background on the land contracting system. The land mining contracting system at Alex Corp started in
1999.
The farms have all been handed over.
And were they productive?
They were productive. They were productive. And they were farms that were set up, initially to for the mines. Obviously, there was a lot more going on at the time, and the market was much bigger in terms of, but it was actually for the mine consumption, mainly. So on the land contracting system, the mining started in 1999 with the mining of screens, dumps, and the recovery of diamonds. And as I mentioned earlier on, there's an area that falls beyond the resource of the pooling and sharing joint venture, and that's an area called Vidfoco. And that we've got two groups involved, the Development Foundation and a women's group that are involved in the mining there. The other mining areas were granted to the retrenched retrenched Alex Core miners. In fact, most of the formation of the contractors, the shallow water contractors, the idea behind it was that they had to look first at former retrenched Alex Core employees. So that makes up the larger part of those groups. Registered mining blocks contain on the land contain the waste dumps, the tailings, and the clean material, and remnants around the excavated areas. So it's no virgin mining blocks at all. The current structure of Alice's employees are about 111 employees at this point in time, and those are fixed Alice's employees. I mentioned the contractors, which are another 400 or so. And then we have other contractors who are security, catering, and OXA, and a few other little businesses in the area that are contracted out. This slide shows the area we're mining, and that's the Alex Cook concession is that red section. So that we mine right up to the Orange River at Alexander Bay, and then down to Port Knowles. So that shows you clearly the land and the marine land. The contracted companies over the diamondiferous gravel area along the coastal strip, and that runs for about 140 kilometers. The processing is done by AlexCore, and the plants are operated by AlexCore and AlexCore Story, so that is totally AlexCore responsible for all the processing. We are also responsible for the marketing of all the diamonds, and we sell all our diamonds on the port in Johannesburg, Johannesburg port. We sell 100% of our production locally, and we have been offering 10% to the state diamond trader.
Can you just clarify whether the contractors are using your machinery or their own machinery?
They use our machinery. They process. Well, no, they use their own machinery to do the mining, but we process all the gravel. So, and I think just maybe a bit of information on this. The arrangement we have with the contractors is we actually have a revenue split. We have to cover the costs of some of the processing, the administration, and part of some other mine-related safety and safety issues. And they then take a percentage split depending on what part of the mine they're actually mining. The stones in the southern part of the mine are smaller, so they obviously the revenue is high. The revenue split is higher for the contractors in that case. So we've tried as best we can, you know, to try and look at ways of also, you know, maximizing revenue for AlexCore. And we've tried to be very creative in our ways of marketing the diamonds. In fact, lately we've actually had one of the best sales. It's the best sale actually in the last 4 years, and that's due to how we've marketed the diamonds. We're actually putting them in different size parcels and making it easier for buyers. So we had quite a good sale recently. But we have obviously been affected quite seriously by the diamond prices, and they did take a cut of about 50%. So the global economic crisis has really, really taken its toll on AlexCore. I'll just skip this next slide because I think Dani's going to go into some of the numbers. But I think that, you know, just we've obviously had, in terms of production, we're doing quite well, but we are affected by what we call the decline in sea days. And that's, you know, it's a question of global warming, sea conditions have changed. We sometimes go for a month or two and we don't even have one sea day. That meaning that the boats can't even go out at all. So there's no production on the marine side. And it's important to note that actually the marine production is 70% of our production. And that's actually the only area until the joint venture is up and running that we can mine, we can mine completely without limitations. So that is a major challenge for us. So that's a slide, sorry. Can you go back? This shows you the decline in sea days over the years.
Explain the concept of sea days. What means about the sea day and what magnifies the sea day?
Okay, the sea day means, if we have a sea day, it means that the boats can actually go out. The conditions of the sea are reasonable enough that you can actually see the visibility, and it's calm enough to not be a threat to security, sorry, to safety. So the boats will only go out when there's certain conditions, and if we don't, they can spend, you know, a month or two without any production. Okay, I think I've just touched on the global economic crisis, but I don't think it's necessary to go into those details. I just said it has affected the prices of diamonds by 50%. So a lot of other companies have actually had to close down their production entirely. In fact, most of our neighbors either, you know, had the luxury of being able to say, okay, we'll close one or two mines because we're just not willing to sell it at these prices. Alexco made the decision we didn't have much choice but to keep the jobs and to keep things going. We decided to actually continue to sell even during this period. Okay, maybe something important to note is that we've made a lot of progress on our health and safety. We've had no fatalities and over the last year. We've had 12 injuries. Fortunately, not major injuries, but we've really we've done quite a lot of work on the safety side, and I think in terms of health and safety, we're looking very, very good. I think we can skip for time. I think we can skip this.
Ready to count. You understand still my index because yours is better than mine.
Okay. And I think the chair did touch on the EMP, and so I don't think I need to go through that. And in terms of our corporate social investment, I think it's important to note that we, in our conversion, we did our social and labor plan, and one of the requirements is local economic development. I think we've done a lot of work on that because we actually have, we're in the process of transforming the town to, we're going to upgrade it to municipal standards. So we're doing a number of studies and implementation, and it's actually a huge, huge project that is going to also it's going to create some jobs, and that's, you know, part of the deed of settlement, but it's also part of our local economic development. So I think maybe on the site visit again, we'll be happy to show you what we're doing there.
Okay. Thank you. Your financial.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I think the Chair and CEO touched on quite a few of these points. I'll also be brief. The CEO said, Alexco closed its own mining operations during this financial year and now only operates with three contractors on land and 27 in shallow waters for a strip of 140 kilometers. Even though we've done this, Alexco has been able to increase its scattered core, and this has been due to quite creative thinking by the contractors, both on sea and land. As you can see, we budgeted for 19,000 odd carats and we achieved 25,000. That's 34% more than budgeted for. Like the CEO said, the dollar per carat achieved on the bourse decreased by 50% after the global economic crisis. And that's clear to be seen for us receiving in the previous year $803 per carat. And this year, an average of $617 only achieved, with a negative variance of 23%. I think this slide, you can actually see this is between the actuals for 2008 and 2009. We've actually increased the carat call by 439 carats, but the revenue is down by 12.3 million rand. and that's mainly due to the dollar precarity achieved, which is down 23%, although the exchange rate helped us a little bit with the 13% increase. It was not nearly enough. And also, like the CEO said, the bulk of the production comes from the marine mining operations, with the revenue decreased from 73% the previous year to 60% this year. This is mainly due to the adverse sea conditions, and that forces the sea mining contractors to actually move to the south of the mine, where the stone size is a lot smaller, and their revenue split is a lot higher. They're on a split of 70-30, so a bigger portion of the amount that you receive on the bores go to them. That's for them to survive in those circumstances. On land, we obviously make the same protocol, even though Alex Gore closed his own mining operation. And this is also, with only 10 safe diving days, the marine actually did quite well, even though they moved to the south of the mine. Like you can see, the decline in the sea days. Anybody who doesn't believe in global warming can just have a look at this graph. From 2003, where we had 79 safe diving days, down to only 10 last year. And this resulted in an operating loss of 77.6 million rand. The operating loss was in some measure due to the negative impact of the actuarial loss due to the Bush Retirement Medical Aid liability of 58.3 million rand. And like we said, the operating cost didn't show a similar downward trend as the income, due to the larger portion that they actually paid out to the marine operators that moved to the south of the mine, and the fixed costs that stayed fixed, like for instance the maintenance of the town and all the other services that Alexcore provides. Cash flow, Alexcore had quite a large amount of money, 300 million odd, but only 97 million remained available for operational purposes. The balance of the cash and cash equivalents are earmarked for ongoing litigation matters. Government-funded projects, 70 million. I'll give you a breakdown of that just now. And environmental rehabilitation trust funds of 27 million. The balance sheet, not much has changed on the balance sheet except for the increase in cash and cash equivalents, which came in from the department, which is for government-funded reserves, which is for specific projects. You'll also see the non-current assets classified as held for sale of 176 million. That asset is still to be transferred to the community once the salient features have been met. The revenue, I've shown the decrease there. Cost of sales remained almost the same due to the high split percentage. And the biggest impact on this income statement is the post-retirement benefit obligation, the provision there, and provision for the environmental liability due to historic mining activities. That's 58 plus the 4.8 million, giving us a net loss after taxation of 65 million. Cash flow, we've touched that, quickly go to the government funded reserves. These are the specific projects that still need to be completed. It's the rehabilitation of Boegeberg, 2.7 million, township establishment, 51 million. Cost related to deed of settlement, 17 million. Revegetation project almost done. PHAV recapitalization, that's once the PHAV kicks in. It's part of the deed of settlement to capitalize the mining to be done there. And then the restructuring cost is a total of 170 million.
Thank you very much. Before we take questions, Kesiwe, there is say you're planning the urbanization into a full municipality area of Alexander, right?
No, it's the municipal upgrade.
Yes.
We're involved in that process, yes.
No, I just wanted to share information with you that the Netherlands Fellowship is offering fellowship programs, which they also pay for, and closing dates on the 16th of November. If you click, I'll forward you an email, but you can click on the Netherlands Fellowship, where they train their short courses, including short courses on urban development and climate change. One of them will be running from June to July next year. And you can nominate people to go and train there. It's a fellowship, so they will also be able to. If you struggle to click on that fellowship page of the Netherlands, ask my secretary to forward that email. You must move with speed because closing date for applications is the 16th of this month. Okay. There are long courses and short courses. Okay. All right. Thanks.
Shall we take a list of Dr. Mayena?
I noticed that your board meetings on page 18 of your report, you seem to have quite a few resignations here. Perhaps if you could comment about that. I'm not terribly sure why that is. The other thing I would like to refer to is on page 26, your internal audit, which is outsourced. And the fact that it has not functioned effectively throughout the year, targets set in the internal audit plan were not achieved, and the risk areas identified by management were not addressed. If we could just have some clarification on that, please. The other point, just following on that, is your shareholders' compact. It was signed between the board and the executive authority, but there was no formal performance appraisal done. If we could just have some clarification about that, that is required by the PFMA. And then just to also request a bit more clarification on the fact that you are not going to get funding now from government, from your shareholder. What are your plans now? How far are you with sourcing some partnerships and some future financing that's going to assist you to go into the future? Thank you.
Members, I'm going to constrain you to three questions each. if you ask less than 3 I have to do this because of time consideration. Thank you, Mrs. Bowman. Peter Panale.
Yes, Madam Chair, through you. I would like to ask, you know, the decline in sea days seem like something that is a handy excuse for, because there's a gradual decline all the time from 70 to about 10. It seems hard to believe that out of 365 days, only 10 days you could use to work. So if you would use need an excuse because the profits are not that high, that would seem like a very good one to use all the time if a decline in operations are there. That is the one thing. I don't chew nicely on that story. And then for a state enterprise that is busy with diamond mining, it seems like we should be talking about billions of rand, not just only a couple of million of rand. This seems like a Mickey Mouse company that is only doing a little, but the CEO's salary increased by 300% in the last year. And so I would like to know, I mean, the CEO of this company earns more than the city manager of Cape Town, which have 23,000 workers. There's only 150 workers in this company, and it's not really making that lot of money. And then I wanted to know if the poaching of diamonds in the sea is a big problem, and if they could elaborate on that, please. That is the three questions I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr.
Kolula. Thank you. I'll be interested to know, Chairperson, about that that women group there in Alexco, which is not part of the pooling and sharing joint venture. I just want to know about the status quo around that, because I remember previously they had some issues with the management. So I know that this group is going to want to meet the committee once the committee visits Alexco next week. So I just want to know more about it as to what is the standing on that one. The second question will be on the decline in sea days that is attributable to climate change. I wonder if there are no other high-tech, what to call, that could be employed in trying to get this diamond under sea. Because I know that this big ship that they were showing us some time ago, an excavator of some kind, that extracts this diamond under sea. If why don't they go for that, actually, because they are no longer making money with the 70% marine exploration. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll try to stick to the three questions. Thank you for the presentation. in your director's report, signed by the Chairperson and the CEO on page 27, paragraph 13, it's a going concern. You talk about the losses suffered during the past number of financial years, and you talk about the impact thereof on the solvency of the company. And then you make the very important statement, the current situation is not sustainable. In the longer term, without the establishment of the pooling and sharing joint venture and commencement of mining activities. When you go to page 23, the independent auditor's report also addressed the same issue that you addressed in your report, director's report, saying there is significant doubt about the ability of the company to continue as a going concern in the longer term. Without the establishment, what you've now explained to the committee, the joint venture with the local community and a commencement of the sustainable mining activities. My question is, first, what plans are in place to address this matter of a going concern in the longer term of Alexco, the company? That's my first question. The second question, you made a loss of, operating loss of 77.6 million, of which 58.3 million is attributable to the negative adjustment to the post-retirement medical and liability benefits. I missed it. Did you explain that? Just unpack this 58 million. Where does it come from? I think it's on page 45. I think it's in a footnote. 8.1, post-medical medical aid benefits, page 45 of your annual report. So just explain your 58 million post-benefit negative adjustment. That's my second question. The third question, well, I've got a number, but let me stick to one. On page 51, against this background of the going concerns, serious doubt about it, about operating loss. Your director's remuneration, 3.6 million, of which the CEO receives 2.4 million. Please just explain that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just to latch on to what Dr. Kronoff is saying, what I would like to know is, in terms of climate change, and you cite it as a factor in the workings of AlexCorp, are you doing any research into the viability of AlexCorp, taking this reality into consideration? And, of course, notwithstanding the excellent work that you are doing for the rest of South community. The second question is, what is the size of the Richtersville community? And lastly, but not least, there were problems in the past reports about gender equity. What is the status now? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Madam Chair, I'm also concerned about the viability of the company. And in addressing the going concern, I would like us to also talk about if they can add to the issue about any studies done about what is the reserve level of diamonds that are there and how long can you continue with this process, because at some point in time it ends. But that is not my question. My question is that if you're involved in diamond business, is there anything that is being done about downward beneficiation? Because there's an important issue about diamonds is that they say that most of your money is made in the downward beneficiation process, not in the mining process. That's my first question. My second question is this. You know, I heard something said here that the transfer of the mining rights, the viability of the company is dependent on the transfer of the mining rights, and the Department of Mineral and Energy takes about 8 months to do this transfer. But my understanding is that if you can reach an agreement with the community, with the people that need the transfer to be done with, you could, without the actual transfer taking place, still continue. It's similar to fishing, I understand that you'll get a right. And the persons who are managing the fish and the people who own the rights may not be the same. And you can reach an agreement about the whole issue so that you can move forward. Because to me, the viability of the company depends on the JV agreement. And is that an impediment, or can we look at it? Because I look at 9 million rands being spent on litigation, and I always say you put four lawyers in the room, you get four different opinions. Anyway, they say a bad settlement is better than a protracted battle. So is there any way to get to that? Lastly, I want to ask about the post-retirement medical aid liability. I need that unpacked for me, because similar situation came about with Transnet, many other state employees, and the advent of the Medical Schemes Act, when it came about how it would address some of those things, how was it handled? And lastly, going forward, how long will that liability be there in view of the fact that if social health insurance or national health insurance comes into being, because I think that can take care of that liability. But I'm interested in terms of the Medical Schemes Act, how did you do that, because you could have mitigated against some of that. Thank you.
Sorry, may ask my two questions. They border on what Mr. Khololo and Hajj and others have asked, the issue of sustainability and the issue of the use of technology and research. I'm sure it could be possible with scientific use of equipment to kind of predict even close to accuracy the sea days ahead of you in a year if you use various things and various established institutions. I mean, there are, for instance, things that can predict the tsunami. Now, to what extent do you employ technology in predicting the year ahead of you? I don't think that you should sit and say, we don't even know how many sea days we will have in the next financial year. So collaborations with people that will be able to assist you to predict as close as possible and then plan as then what to do. Secondly, the issue of high-tech. The people that you have contracted, did you make sure that they will be able to bring on board? That's why I asked initially the machinery. Is it yours or is it theirs? Are you able to make sure that you insist in contracting people who use high-tech facilities so that the issue of sea days or non-sea days should not be the only thing that will determine whether you will do well as a company or not? And then the last question linked to Mr. Sajid is, apart from the size of the population there, do you know the other social circumstances that are burdening the society around the mine, including the issue of diseases? Because I think as a state-owned enterprise, we have got a role to make sure that when you enter into these JVs, when you do these things that you are trying to do to elevate that place to a municipal area, you are alive to the social burdens of some of them could be traced back to mining activities. Thank you.
Thank you very much, members of the committee and Madam Chairperson. Just to look at the issue of the litigation, specifically in terms of the amount of 9.7 million that's reflected in the financial statement. That amount is funds that have been set aside in anticipation of either settlements or potential losses in the event that those processes run the full course. Clearly, in terms of looking at some of those legal processes, we do look to engage in reaching settlement as quickly as possible, but sometimes you don't have a willing party on the other side and you're then forced to go through the entire process. So that amount of 9.7 million is not necessarily expenditure on legal costs at this point in time, but is actually provision that we have made in anticipation of what may be awards to the other party if cases go against us. Katiwa, do you want to address the specific...
Okay, I think a lot of the issues that the chair raises are actually historical issues that we are dealing with. So that's why we've had to sort of just budget a certain amount of funds for litigation. In certain cases, we have two cases that are sort of ongoing, and one is the Roslyn case. And in some cases, it's actually very difficult to get witnesses with information because these are things that have actually happened quite a few years ago. So we've had to sort of like reconstruct a lot of the information, and that can be obviously time-consuming and very costly because it's not we're not just calling on people who are still with Alex Corps or have recently left. But just to confirm, yes, it's not necessarily. As you know, we just allocate that amount for issues of this nature because unfortunately we have some ongoing ones.
Madam Chair, the 9 million is held in trust by our attorneys for the two ongoing litigations.
I guess if we then move on, in terms of looking at the socioeconomic issues and what is the outlook, I think one of the things that we need to bear in mind is that location is quite remote from anywhere. So we do appreciate and recognize that Alexco is a player in that region, plays quite an important role in terms of looking after certain conditions. As an example, part of the transfer process required that we shift hospitals or our hospital that was in the area servicing not only our employees but some of the surrounding community across to the provincial authorities. And that process has met with some mixed success to an extent where we've actually had to make some investment as Alexco in terms of making sure that we've got some basic occupational health and safety components in place, and also looking at then beefing that up with having a local GP and that kind of thing to make sure that we do have sufficient basic care as part of that process. Part of the challenge that we find, and I guess in discussion with some of the relevant authorities, is that being such a remote location is very difficult for them to attract relevant professionals in that area. So that is something that we do grapple with as a bigger issue. I think in looking at what are some of the challenges around employment, etc., I think we look at that area and it's been decimated, as the CEO, I think, mentioned. De Beers has closed quite a lot of their adjacent and adjoining mining operations in that area. Transhex has also done the same thing. So as far as we are aware, there's probably been job losses in the order of a couple of thousand, in addition to, obviously, our own closure. So clearly that has quite a big impact in that particular area. But again, it's really a key issue of economic fundamentals that have forced all of us to do what we've needed to do. And in the absence of us being able to be active at full production, which to some degree is a function of the deed of settlement process that was reached in 2007, we do have some limitations in terms of our ability to mobilize and do more in terms of the socioeconomic front at this point in time.
If I may just add, I think in terms of the contribution it makes on a, you know, for the economy in that area, I think the question was also, just do the people on the coalface see this as sustainable? And I believe they do. Obviously, the current situation, we're not functioning, the company is not mining as much as it could, because we're limited. We're hardly doing any land mining. If we could maximize on the land mining, we would obviously, that Alexco could be generating a lot of much higher revenue. And therefore, I think it is the only, it's apart from a bit of farming in the area, it's actually the main source of income, mining. It's almost the only source of income. So I think it's important to note that, you know, how fundamental Alexco's presence is for the local economy.
I think one of the questions that was also asked is the issue of what is the resource base in that area. I think one of the stark realities is that probably since going back as far as about 1997-odd, there hasn't really been any proper exploration done in that particular area. So whilst there's, I guess, geological maps and that sort of thing, the real underground drilling of holes, etc., to really establish where resource lies is work that hasn't really been undertaken for a long, long time. And part of that process was because there was always uncertainty pertaining to the action from the Richter's Fault community. There were also questions around at the time whether Alexco would be part of a process of bringing in a strategic equity partner who would then have deeper pockets to undertake some of that much-needed exploration. So to some degree, there are estimates of what resource lies, but the accuracy of those in terms of the specific places where those diamonds would be found and would be in a position where they would be mineable economically is something that is a bit of a question. I think we have a resource estimate of somewhere in terms of the low estimate at this point in time of about 800,000 carats, and obviously in terms of looking at the annual production that we're looking at, that would give us somewhere in the order of, I guess, 20 to 40 years of mining activity still, if we look at the current production of around about 20 to 25 odd thousand that we're doing as an average in the last three or so years. So again, it depends on to what extent mining activity would be apt. Obviously, that becomes then a determiner in terms of life of mine. But at this point in time, if you look at the current mining activity, you would have somewhere in the order of approximately 40 odd years of life of mine still left.
No, is that for pre-mining or for land mining?
This is looking at the total now. We think that there's a resource of roughly about 800 odd thousand carats that has been estimated as the available carats that is in the concession area. And if you then look at the fact that we're mining at about 30,000 per year, you would have somewhere in the order of, 25 to 30 odd years of life of mine left still.
No, at this stage, I must say, we will need figures as to your lifespan for sea mining and your lifespan for land mining. It doesn't help to conglomerate the figure and tell us that you have 40 years of prospective mining ahead. So if you don't have that kind of exact figure, you'll have to send it back to us.
That's fine, yeah. We will do that, Madam Chair. In terms of looking at then the next point around the number of resignations that we had, effectively some of those members' terms had come up, and obviously at the time they then chose to resign and move on to other things. I think it was also, I guess, a period where we were now reaching the conclusion of the deed of settlement, and I think perhaps the shareholder would elaborate on this, but there was perhaps a feeling that you maybe needed a slightly different composition of board member to take the process through the transition phase that was going, in terms of then looking at actually doing the implementation of the deed of settlement in conjunction with the community. Anthony, I don't know if there's anything else you want to ask.
Just
Yes,
just to elaborate a bit on that, Mr. Muzuriri mentioned, Alexco had been involved in the land claim process for a long time, and this the board that existed at the time was very very instrumental in reaching that settlement. Then we came to a point where in 2007 the deed of settlement was signed, and we then got into, after it was made an order of court, we got into an implementation process. Some of the board members' terms were coming to an end, and we thought there was need for some restructuring in terms of the skill set to ensure that this deed of settlement was effectively implemented. So at the time that some of the board members opted to stand down, we had a short interim period in which the DG and Ms. Sandra Kusia acted as directors on the board, as we're getting the right new skills onto the board. So that would relate to the number of resignations that are indicated on that. It was a short period, and then new board members were appointed in September of 2008, and the Alex Hope board was built up.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for that answer. But I just, you say that their term of office had come to an end. I noticed that if you look on page 18 at the schedule of attendance of meetings, some of those people had not yet been appointed and then, you know, attended one meeting and then there were resignations. So, you know, was it that there was a feeling that they were not suitable on the board and were kind of asked to resign in view of the fact, you know, of the Richter Spelt changes that were taking place?
And when the DG and another person were asking where they remunerated for. No,
they were not remunerated. So I think the two that you're probably referring to that were not appointed, that then resigned, Ms. Molefe and Ms. Kutia, who are the DG and the DDG respectively. So they acted in assisting us with meeting quorum requirements that are in the memorandum and articles of association of the company to make sure that we had a fully constituted board. And for that specific meeting, they then were appointed as members, and subsequent to then the appointment of the four or five members that you see at the bottom, they then resigned their positions because at that point we were then fully constituted as required in terms of our memorandum and articles.
Are you happy, Mrs. Bowman? Any other philosophy?
I'm
not altogether happy, but it's an explanation.
If
we
have
time left, I'll come back.
Yes,
mm.
Okay.
You may proceed.
Thank you. In terms of the internal audit area, I guess it is a function that due to lack of internal skills we have looked at and was one that made sense to outsource. In the year under review, I think we had some unhappiness in terms of the performance of the particular firm that had been appointed to undertake that function, which is why it was highlighted. Subsequently, we have gone through a tendering process where a new firm of internal auditors has been appointed, and at this point in time, as far as I'm aware, we are happy with the work that they're doing. Would you like to comment?
Yes, I think also, you know, the point we have appointed a new company, and maybe it's a little bit, it'll be a bit soon to say how we feel about them, but they have been, they're officially on board, so I think the problem has been resolved.
You are left out 8 minutes.
Okay.
You don't have to exhaust
that list, yeah. So I think maybe what we need to do is then maybe address the biggest question that did come through in a number of areas, which is the issue of solvency at this point in time. I think the first thing is that because of the deed of settlement process, we have received some compensation for some of the funds that Alexco had that have been transferred to the community. And accordingly, that's given us some cash ability to continue trading. If we look specifically in terms of the 2009 year-end financials where we experienced a 77.6 million rand loss, I think the first thing that's important to highlight there is that the bulk of that loss was a non-cash adjustment, which related to the post-retirement medical aid. And that issue arose as a result of the re-evaluation of our post-retirement medical aid. Effectively, every 3 years, we're statutorily required to do an actuarial evaluation of our post-retirement benefit package, which looks at our member profile in terms of people that have retired, what their life expectancy is, and what future expectations are around a medical aid, because in terms of historical agreements that were in place, Alexco was required to provide fully for those affected employees, and in most cases they were provided for it the best medical aid package that was available. This is something that I think a number of other state-owned enterprises have grappled with, and is something that we are also still grappling with. Part of the process that we're looking at this point in time in terms of limiting that liability is we're going through a consultation process with the affected retirees and soon-to-be retirees to look at reducing the package that they're on, whilst providing as comprehensive coverage as we can. Clearly, we have some issues because it is a Labor Relations Act, and as a company, we cannot unilaterally change conditions of service without agreement from the employees. So the options that we face is either we put the various schemes into liquidation, or we need to go through a consultation process. And at this point in time, we believe that the best way is to try and resolve the matter through negotiation, and some of that activity is already going on at this point in time to look at reducing the cost of that post-retirement package. As a broader issue at this point in time, Alexco is looking and exploring a number of strategic alternatives. I think some of the challenge that we do face is that because we haven't been in a position to as expeditiously as we had hoped to resolve the issue of the establishment of the PSJV, we do find that we are a little bit hamstrung in terms of, getting formal approval in terms of looking at new alternatives from a strategic perspective, because I think from a shareholder perspective and in terms of some of the legal requirements that we face in terms of the deed of settlement, there's quite a requirement for us to make sure that we fulfill and complete the deed of settlement process, because if we don't, there are quite significant penalties that could arise and possibly unraveling of that whole process, which could have quite significant implications from an overall cost perspective. So I think there's been a strong feeling, and I guess the shareholder is here and can confirm or deny, but there's been a strong feeling that we really need to focus on implementing the deed of settlement and get the pooling and sharing joint venture process established as quickly as practically possible to ensure that there are no adverse legal implications that could have significant financial consequences for the company and obviously for the state if the deed of settlement is not implemented.
Before the shareholder says anything, there was a question about shareholder contact. If it was entered, whatever is left is okay, but it must be entered. Okay.
Sorry, Madam Chair. The shareholder's contact was signed, and we actually have a meeting scheduled with the Department of Public Enterprise to just take the process forward. But in the meantime, we actually have put in place performance, not just performance appraisals, but performance contracts with all the management that we just need. Will be signed off at our next REMCO meeting. So we have a whole system. We're quite happy to share the information with yourselves, because quite an extensive amount of work was done on that, and that was actually, we aligned it with the deliverables in the shareholders' compact that actually was guiding us in terms of the performance. So that is right from CEO and all the other managerial positions. There's a question that was raised by a few members, and that was around the C-date. It may sound like, you know, an excuse for us not to mine, but we actually cannot mine on, because of poor visibility and sea conditions. It's very, very dangerous, and we would be, in terms legally, we would not be allowed to send boats out. However, we are looking at measures to try and, you know, look at alternative ways of production on those particular days. And we have been in discussions with other companies that actually, Alex has had in the past various people coming forward saying we can do this, you know, we've got other means. But we actually have to look at what is affordable in terms of there's a lot of technology out there that has been tested, and some is in experimental phases. But we are actually in discussions with companies that look at setting up platforms and that can actually build in almost secure areas where you can actually mine on those days where you wouldn't normally be able to go out. So we are looking at it quite seriously.
How long will this take?
Well, we have to, obviously it has to be an open process where there are a number of companies that have come forward with proposals. So it will have to go through, and we'll have to have a tender, a proper tender process for that.
Yes, I mean, in the next 3 years, will that be kind of resolved?
That should be resolved in the next 3 years. Obviously, because it's an area where Alexco can move, it doesn't necessarily have to wait for the joint venture to be in place. However, we have to be mindful that even the marine rights, although they will be Alexco's, will be mined by the PSJV jointly. So we need to take the community on board in any of the decisions that we make going forward.
I think the other issue then related around funding, what partnerships and what funding is in place. I think at this point in time, that is a function of getting approval from the department in terms of new direction for Alexco. And I think at this point in time, some of the process has been that we've not been able to meet with the Department of Minerals and Resources because there's another entity that has been established, as far as we understand, within the Department of Minerals that has and holds certain mining concessions. And part of the process is then understanding what Alexco's role would be in a rationalization process vis-a-vis that other entity. So those processes we have been pursuing together with assistance from DPE, and is, I guess, at this point in time, a function also that obviously there's been a split in terms of the old Department of Minerals and Energy, and they've been in the process of reorganizing and realigning themselves, and practically we just have not had the opportunity to engage with them actively in terms of understanding where they sit and what that would have as an implication on Alexco as such. So at this point in time, we have not been in a position where we could pursue funding alternatives or different other partnerships at this point in time, because it needs to be part of a broader strategic understanding of what Alexco's role would be in the bigger picture of the intention of the state around having a state-owned mining entity and how that would be structured, which is a process that is still unfolding at this point in time.
How many questions are still answered? Do you know how many answers are still answered? You've got...
There are probably about maybe 9 or 10 questions.
You have to print.
Okay, I think the other key issue that has been asked is around, I think, the issue of the board remuneration and also specifically then that of the CEO. In terms of how that is run, we look at the guidelines that are set out by DPE for state-owned enterprises in terms of similar size organizations to ourselves, and that scale then provides us with the basis on which we calculate the remuneration for the board members and for the CEO. In addition to that, I think one of the things that has happened, particularly since 2007, is that we've seen a massive exodus of key layers of management staff, and effectively we run with a very skeleton management composition at this point in time. So the other component that we have to look at in terms of establishing that remuneration is to then look at the broad area of responsibility that is taken on by the one individual vis-a-vis the fact that there are a number of roles that have to be combined given the financial status that we're in and the fact that we have uncertainties around where the future of the organization is going, and we're not necessarily able to fill the multiple functional roles that might otherwise be the case, and that in fact those functional roles are then being undertaken by one individual as opposed to perhaps having multiple parties looking at them. So that does become an impact in terms of the remuneration issue.
Is there one individual, the CEO?
Yeah.
He's doing all the work.
Well, we've lost, I mean, we don't have an HR manager, we don't have an operations manager, et cetera, because those roles, we've just not fulfilled those roles given the uncertainties that are there, because the expectation is that once the PSJV takes over, a lot of those functions will then be run by a management team established by the PSJV. So accordingly, we effectively run with a management team that comprises of two, three people effectively.
just ask something,
Madam Chair. So it's in the best interest of the individual that is then in charge then to have as little people under him as possible, because then he will get all the money for himself. I mean, why would you appoint other people if you are earning that money? Because you would have no motivation to get those people underneath you to do this work.
I think that's a bit unfair to the CEO. Maybe we should ask the board. It's the board that must take responsibility for this. I don't think it's a question of one person amassing responsibility or others in order to get more things. But you will answer this question. There is a follow-up from Dr. Pile and Dr. Manyena.
I think in terms of...
Yes.
I think, as I read in the financial statement, is the remuneration committee makes a recommendation to the department, and then the department agrees on a remuneration package. That's what I read here. Maybe the question should be to the department rather than to the board about how this was approved, considering the number of employees, the size of the company, and the turnover of the company. And in terms of its function and its profitability, what was the justification from the department side in comparison with other state-owned enterprises? Because the question should be that maybe you don't have to answer it in this session. The board can answer it even in the second session that we have in the afternoon.
I was already beginning to say that we are encroached. These things are related. We are in a way also going into the presentation of GPE, but I think members are in order to ask questions in this session, and those questions that need to be carried over to the GPE presentation, we will also ask them when GPE does, and I don't think that will be the last interaction with GPE today on that aspect. Thanks. Dr. Mangena?
I'm covered by Dr. Pile. I think the GPE says the guidelines, and as you said, it's a bit unfair. The whole matter squarely on the board or the management of Alex.
Yes, and this issue of the board and the department becomes critical. The shareholder and the department and the board, we need to clarify the confusion. We're running on critical injury time because we took coffee, it's not your board. We took a lot of your minutes taking coffee before we started. So our injury time is 10 minutes at the point, at which point I will cut off. Thank you.
I think one of the other critical questions that was asked was around the issue of the women's grouping. I think as a core issue from Alexco, we've obviously been looking at how do we deal with the issue of empowerment and development to make sure that we are getting the most impact in areas where people are affected. I think we've had recent interactions with some of the groupings because we're finding that they do still have some challenges in terms of some of the subcontractors that they appoint in terms of working to assist them in achieving the output requirement. I think the challenge for us is obviously that on the one hand we're the referee, so we can't also be a player. So we do try and assist them in terms of putting in place appropriate management and operational agreements in place with their subcontractors. We do assist them in terms of looking at how they negotiate the revenue sharing and profit sharing arrangements with their subcontractors. But ultimately, we do expect that as business people that they will take some responsibility for becoming engaged in those operations directly themselves, and that they become more engaged in terms of running the operations, because ultimately that's what the process is supposed to be. But I think it is a process, in fairness, that is an evolving one that does require some ongoing work, and is something that we continue to look at and assist as best we can to make sure that there's optimal returns for those groupings as we move along.
Sorry, if I may just add, on the women's group, actually we are assisting them in facilitating, so there have been some concerns around the way their subcontractors are actually not being too effective as far as they see it, and they feel that the production is quite limited. So we've tried to facilitate that, and we're going to see if they need to look at somebody else as a subcontractor. We're going to assist them. But again, as the chair said, we are trying to make sure that they're actually involved in the operations as much as possible, so they don't just hand over to somebody who does the work and they actually aren't on top of things. And we've seen quite a lot of progress in the last year. Okay, I think, sorry, just there was another issue around the status of gender in the company. We have on a management, we have over 50% of women on our management and board. I'm happy to send the figures, but I think we're not doing too badly. The area where we are lacking a bit is on the diver side,
which is
the huge area, and that's what we're trying to see, you know, how we can move on that. We've Alexco's looking at setting up its own training facility for divers. So I think the idea will also to try and encourage as many women as to get involved as possible. But at the moment, there's a lack there. That's where we're really short of women participation.
Is the chairperson offering on this women gender issues like you? Because I don't think she be an issue for women, even if you are a CEO, to speak on. I just want to see the chairperson, how much he understands this issue and how informed he is on this.
Yes, Madam Chairperson, we do engage quite a lot on it, and I think in terms of our employment practices, it is something that we look at, and I do participate on the remuneration committee where we look at this as a specific issue, so I am fairly well versed in it, Madam Chairperson. And it is a challenge. Part of the challenge for us is obviously that some of the particular skills do require extensive years of training to get people up and running. We've historically run bursary schemes in the company which look at filling some of those key roles around geologists, financial management people, administrative people, etc. But obviously something that we, when we get to the end of those periods, if we're in a position where we're not growing as a company, we're not necessarily in a position where we are able to employ individuals into positions that can assist us in meeting those requirements. And a further issue is that obviously at this particular point in time, given the fact that we are in some limbo around what is going to be happening with the pooling and sharing joint venture, what they're going to be looking at as a team composition, we do have some restrictions in terms of our ability to effectively address some of those concerns. But to the extent that we can, we do keep it as one of the issues that we look at in addressing our employment, as well as in looking at the composition of our contractor partners as well.
Yeah, your figures actually are horrifying, especially the semi-skills, also in terms of gender. We would like you, Chairperson, to make a presentation later so that we don't renegade issues of women's participation in the economy to women CEOs just because they are there. Your figures are appalling. We want to hear a sense from you what you are going to do moving forward to improve the figures on page 40 of the
Chairperson, what you've been said here and what is in the statement is worrying me, because if you look at the employment equity, because the question came, I didn't ask the question. If you take semi-skilled, if you take page 14, if you take semi-skilled and unskilled, which is what we're looking at, even in that the number of women employed is minuscule compared to the number of men. And so that is what I can understand diving, you could say skilled, although there are enough women divers now, including my wife. but you're talking about semi-skilled and unskilled labors, and the figures is not what is it. Maybe we should get a breakdown some point in time. Then
no.
So we can look at it.
In general, we need to sit with you in a meeting where you give us the plan to rectify the situation, and it was a plan that would be led and communicated by the chairperson, not by the CEO as a whole. Together, you look into that plan and you bring it forward. We'll invite you in the beginning of the year.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. I think also we do just need to keep in mind the context under which the transformation will need to happen. bearing in mind that Alexco board at this point in time is constrained in terms of what it can do, even the establishment of the pooling and sharing joint venture. So that is something that needs to be borne in mind as part of that process. Because we may well find that as part of the ongoing process, actually the Alexco board is not responsible for the ongoing employment practices, because that's now taken over by the pooling and sharing joint venture. And in reality, that has been part of the challenge that we face, because in fairness, I've only been chairperson for a year, and the time when I got appointed as chairperson, we already had entered into the period where we were restricted in terms of the deed of settlement having established about 6 to 8 months before that period. So, yes, I do appreciate the concerns that that are being raised, but it is unfortunately we're in a period where we are hamstrung in terms of our ability to proactively act on some of the challenges that we face.
But you will explain to us what takes it to take a person from being unskilled to being semi-skilled, and we'll investigate whether it is rocket science and the resources needed and the time needed. Then we will check whether your arguments are
followed. That's fine. I think in maybe closing off, because I see we are running out of time, I think the one question was, what is the size of the Richter Salt community? That number is approximately 2,500 in terms of the members of the Richter Salt community. And then I think the issue around what are the social circumstances around diseases, etc. Historically, I think as we mentioned, Alexco has run the medical facilities entirely, and as part of that process, we've obviously made sure that we've got appropriate programs around things like HIV awareness, voluntary care and testing, etc., and we've, I think on the whole, found that we don't really have a major issue in terms of communicable diseases, etc., but it is something that we obviously keep high on the agenda, and we invest in quite significantly in terms of making sure that we do comply with the occupational health and safety requirements, but also that we provide as best as possible minimum care levels for our staff and those members of the surrounding community, and then any more significant occurrences then get passed on to some of the bigger facilities in adjoining areas like Springbok, etc. But given the remoteness of the location, we have invested quite a lot in making sure that we are able to take care of our staff and their families, etc., within our own facilities as best as possible.
Sorry, Madam Chair, I think there was also a question around beneficiation and whether we have any plan to beneficiate our diamonds. There was actually a proposal. We had a session, a strategic planning session, where we looked at all possible future options for Alexco, and beneficiation was put on the table because, I mean, I think it's obviously that is where the value is, and the markup is actually when you're cutting and polishing. But at the time, it was decided because of the pooling and sharing joint venture that maybe Alexco would not, at that point in time, look at beneficiation. But I think it's certainly something that maybe the joint venture would need to look at. We are, however, all of our diamonds are sold locally, so, and you know, through the state diamond trade, as I mentioned, so at least we are supporting in that sense beneficiation. But I think, you know, it's something that we definitely should look at as a joint venture.
May I just check with members if all your questions have been answered,
Dr. No, not a question. I just want to register my disappointment in the answering or the answer that the chairperson gave regarding the going concern. There's clearly two issues that the independent auditors registered for you to go as a going concern. One, you established a joint venture with the local community. You addressed that. You've pointed out the challenges. The second is the commencement of sustainable mining activities. And I think the chairperson in his reply has not addressed this is a major issue facing Alex Corp and you as a board and as a management. And you don't know, maybe we press for time, so we can't expect him to or the board now to answer it here. But in the next annual report you will have to address this issue. of this going concern in more detail. Or even if we go to the community, to the visit there, we need to see for ourselves and address the issue. We cannot run over this just in a lighter-hearted manner. We need to address it. This is the future of the company we're discussing.
In our closing remarks today, we have noted you, Madam Adi. We need to say to Alexco, we need to see you early in the year, and I don't think we can wait until the next annual report. There are just too many issues here that should be addressed. And if I have Dr. Pillay's attention, I think the issue you are raising should be one of the issues that they come back to us in the beginning of the year, fairly early in the year. And I think that we should tell them our concerns as this company, and that we, that's the things that we want to see with you within the next 3 years of the remaining term of our office as Parliament, including the future, which revolves around the future of your company. So if I may beg your understanding that we do that early in the year rather than wait for the time of the annual report.
The simple question about the poaching and what they are doing about it and if it was a problem.
Yes, that question was not answered, but I want to take a follow-up from Madam Hadid, then we give them time to answer.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just concerned about, I didn't actually hear the reply to the question whether Alex Core is engaging in research or has plans in doing research as to how they're going to address the viability as a organization. Now, this is important because it also appears that Alex Core and the Department of Minerals are not really talking to each other. Because I think this thing of Alex Core cannot be addressed as in a vacuum. So I think the issue is much broader. And whether you like it or not, the Department of Trade of Public Enterprises also has to sit down with the Department of Minerals and Energy. Because otherwise we're going around in circles, we're doing little bits here and little bits there instead of looking at the broader picture of exactly where our mining sector in South Africa and in terms of industrialization, in terms of building viable mining structures are concerned. I really would like to know what you have in the pipeline in terms of research to actually take your company forward. Thank you.
And when we met with France, that we see them out where they are talking to you people in terms of development of the harbor. Because when they showed us the load along the coast of activity in terms of the harbor, we asked them about that side of the our country where the resources is. So you need to talk to DTI, you need to talk to Department of Minerals and Energy, you need to talk to France and also. Otherwise, the future is the sense of your company. You may proceed.
Chairperson, I don't want to delay the meeting, but I think also there is some solutions regarding the post-retirement liability for health. There are some developments in that respect regarding NHI and what has happened, because what you are facing is a similar thing faced by Transnet, and they had a solution. And it's also a similar thing that is faced by Goldfields and this thing where they were providing health care themselves and how they, what they did to take care of that problem. If you could send us something in writing about that, we could look at it and talk to the health department and also to the Council for Medical Schemes and come back with you with some suggestions. We would do that without consultancy fees.
Sorry, Madam Chair, I think maybe I'll just ask. So we actually have done some work on that, and I'm going to ask Peter to just give us a very quick update in terms of what we have been trying to do on the ground with regard to the medical aid liability.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Currently, we are weighing up all our options. We have consulted various firms in labor consultants and specialized insurance in the specialized insurance industry. Currently, we are weighing up all our options and the legal and impact on the employer and employee, and where we will have to take a decision towards what option we will have to take.
Can you just forward that information to us in writing? And we have a medical expert here sitting in our team in the hospital. We will engage that and we will offer you advice. We cannot decide for you.
Thank you very much.
The scenario that we will offer you advice.
I think just to address the issue of poaching at this point in time, I think the one thing is that obviously the area that we operate in is quite a significant area, but we've over the number of years put in fairly substantial security measures, and as far as we are aware, there's no major poaching activity that's happening in terms of I guess our diamond locations, etc. And I think also just the issue of the sea conditions that we face is in itself probably quite a deterrent to people that might otherwise have ambitions around the poaching side. So at this point in time, it is obviously something that we remain aware of, but it's not something that's a major issue in terms of our experience at this point in time.
Yes, I guess if I may add, we actually do have quite good structures in place in terms of the security, and we also have people within that checked. You know, so we actually have. I mean, within our security, we have people who look out as well. So I mean, I think the security company, we try and make sure that we don't have one security company for too long a period. There needs to be rotation, and we try and some of the areas that are problematic with access, we've beefed up on our checkpoints, closed fence areas off that are at threat. But the thing is, I mean, the areas that maybe are sort of a little bit exposed, that usually the diamond grade is so low there anyway that it doesn't really pose such a huge security risk.
Madam Chair, just then coming back to the issue of what research have we done into the, I guess, future and future viability of Alexco. I think some of the context is that when the deed of settlement was signed in around about October 2007, some of the expectation was that the conditions precedent would be achieved fairly quickly. I think the reality on the ground has been that those practical realities were took much longer to actually put in place, and I think there was a bit of a disconnect between the parties that did the legal drafting as to ourselves, who then had to get into the process of that implementation. So part of the process was that there was an expectation that within effectively a 12 to 18 month period that the PSGF would be established and would undertake a proper mining plan, which would involve doing extensive exploration as part of that exercise. That process has not been done. Part of that is obviously there was an expectation that the mining rights, etc., would have been converted and transferred within that period of time. The practical realities, when it came time to do the necessary work that needed to be put in place, upgrading our environmental management and rehabilitation plans, undertaking the social and labor plans, etc., all was components that took quite a lot of time. In the interim, the Alexco board has gone through and conducted some scenario planning in terms of what we would expect under various circumstances with the PSGF coming into place or not coming into place, and those issues are currently under discussion with the Department of Public Enterprises at this point in time.
I think the issue that I want to hear here is, if you get a JV in place, what is the expectation? Will it turn around? What would happen? You know, we should have that in mind, because I'm not hearing that part of it. What, having a JV in place, how much will it affect the company? I don't know. Maybe I'm being unfair to you, but that's it.
I'm inclined to say that question you must go and prepare to answer it when we meet you next time early in the year. KQA and DPE.
take care to a person to be. Madam Chair, I'm happy for us to answer it in the year, but I think that, you know, I think rather there are some, there is a response so that we can give you now. A report was done by an interim board that was appointed by the public enterprise, which has representatives of the community and then three representatives of Alex, well, Alex for, not Alex for employees, but the Alex for the shareholder, the shareholding Alex for with all. And this interim board is independent. It has done a report which they have presented to us and to BPE, and that has a lot of this, will actually answer a lot of the questions that you're asking around what is the future sustainability of the company. And I think that would actually be it's not coming directly from us. They've taken some of the information that Alexco has and updated it. So I think maybe what we should do is share that report with you.
Well, I'd just like to address a couple of issues, and Katira has touched on the first one. The deed of settlement provided for an interim joint board comprising a representative of Alexco and the community, and they had to do the preparatory work to ensure that everything was in place by the time all the suspensive conditions for the PSJV were fulfilled. That joint board has undertaken a lot of investigations around the operations of Alexco, as well as some investigation around the mineral resource. And they have been looking at what kind of mining arrangements they are able to enter, the financing or around that, whether they would then go into secondary contracting systems. But that interim joint board has basically had the mandate of doing all the preparatory work. In terms of the future sustainability of Alexco, we have been in discussion with the Department of Mineral Resources, DMR, basically looking at the future role of Alexco within the context of and the policy framework of the state's involvement in the mining sector, and we're looking at the various options around that. No conclusions have been made at this point, but we expect to be a bit more clear as we go along.
I want to close this session of the meeting by requesting that you remember that we asked that you tell us the prospects of mining land and sea, because that will also inform the nature of partners you should attract going forward to make sure that your company continues to be sustainable. The second issue brings us almost towards the second presentation of DPE, this issue of the boards, their mandates, their roles, etc., etc. You, in your report, you say that there was a time when the DG and the DPG were acting for quorum purposes, or where they participated in a board. So that shows that there is a possibility, a phenomenon is possible, where the department can actually play the role that are played by boards and save us a lot of money in the SOE. It's a phenomenon that I think we must seriously examine. I know this is could be threatening to boards, but it's a phenomenon we have been playing with, to say that is it possible to save money, millions of money that we give to both, can't the department play that role? And so that brings to question the issue of shareholder contacts and a whole range of other things and looking into that. What is confusing us is some boards, you don't know whether they are executive or non-executive. You don't know who is an executive board member, who is a non-executive, what are their roles. Today there is an executive chairperson, tomorrow there is a non-executive chairperson. the department and the shareholder plays this card close to its chest, and it makes oversight impossible and difficult. You really don't know what kind of a board, as you move from SOE to SOE, you don't know what kind of a board are you dealing with. In some instances, the board is executive, the chairperson, in some instances, not executive. You don't know their roles. And we have asked this PE 6 months now. We have asked you for an interim report every 3 months of the on the board, the mandates of the board, how they are constituted, based on what rules. Can these rules be changed willy-nilly by the shareholder at any given time? That makes it difficult for us to do our work as Parliament. This is actually ushering us into the next presentation, but I will ask for a 5 minute body break. This meeting is closed. We will write to you, Alexo, to remind you of the things that we need to discuss and that you must put before us when we meet early in the year. We wish you a happy landing. Back in Johannesburg.
Thank you, members of Parliament, and Madam Chairperson.
Thank you very much.
The meeting is recorded. Thank you. Let's, BTE, will you forgive us for 3 minutes? We want to engage our program for oversight business. Before I do that, there is another issue, the pension, the Transnet pension fund. Members, I just want to say to you that right at the beginning of this term, we went through a process of strategic planning. And there are a lot of things that we put into that strategic plan. Some of them are just attached as annexures to the strategic plan. One of the issues was the issue that we have called the DPE for today for performance management. But there was another issue that we had put into the strat plan, that is the issue of the pension fund of Transnet. I would urge Disang to give both the annex, to recirculate the strat plan as well as the annex chart to the strat plan to committee members, so that if we need to review that between now and the period when we come back next year, you apply your minds, because most of you were robbed of the opportunity of contributing to that strat plan because you were in other committees. So we might need to do a review. It's a 5-year plan, actually, that I'm referring to. We adopted the 1-year plan. I don't have a problem with that. But attached to that, there was a longer 5-year plan that I need you to take with you when we go on recession, to apply your minds to it and bring back feedback. One of the things that is in the structure is the pension fund of Transnet, which was sponsored by Dr. Van der Beek. And I'm going to ask you, after we deal with the oversight visit, I'm going to give you a little bit. We'll just take 3 minutes to take you through the oversight visit. And then we'll give Dr. Van der Beek time to speak to the issue of Transnet pension fund. As you know, we tried a lot to get permission and money. We now have permission and money to go and do oversight. And I will ask Disan to take us through the oversight thing. Just to say that we'll have to leave on a Sunday because our first day starts fairly early, so we can't fly out on Monday. We'll have to fly out on Sunday. But also to say that the Alexco visit, Parliament has complained about the chartered flight and the cost. So I thought that we should take, because it's quite costly to go to Alexco. I'm putting it as a recommendation that maybe we need to half the committee to reduce the number, to take 3 members of the ANC together with 2 members of the opposition and the chairperson. Because if we go to Alexco, we will not have money left in our coffers as a committee until April next year. We will not even have money for our international visit. It will encroach into our international study groups. So that's the proposal I'm putting before you. So Alesco have indicated that they are not available next week. They have asked that we should visit the committee and then early next year. Remember that we'll have 2 weeks of committee work before Parliament officially opens first week of February, so we could look into that within those first 2 weeks. Okay. Is that agreed, Member? Yes, sir?
Yes, Madam Chair, I don't have a problem with your recommendation as long as if I'm not the one to go, if I would be able to drive myself there and then it would be no cost to Parliament and I also would like to go, then you mustn't exclude me from that process. No,
we will take you to save cost and you'll drive yourself as long as you will not claim back from us.
Yeah.
Good. Good South African. I love you so much. Thank you. So you are in the list of people that are going because you're not incurring a cost. So it means we'll talk about, yes, sir?
No.
I don't want us to do this kind of things in a meeting situation. We'll talk about who goes and all those, but you are definitely in. Take us through the program quickly.
Okay.
Members have copies?
I circulated the copies of the program. For the 16th, when the committee will leave on Sunday in the evening to Johannesburg. And then on the morning of the 16th, we've written to the minister and the board that we would like to meet them before we do the undertake the visit to the site visit. So we will have a brief meeting with the board and the management of SAA, but the meetings will not be long, and then we'll have the site visit over the OR Tambo of international airport in terms of the operations.
And this will be with AXA.
What
AXA will lead us into the various points of the airport where. And it will be of our choosing, the points we want to take.
And then in the afternoon, we will be having a site visit for on the Transnet pipeline.
Along the Transnet pipeline,
because initially, we didn't know actually where to locate it, because we thought we'd do it in CNTE, but they said, no, in Johannesburg, actually, we can drive somewhere where we can see the pipeline. On the 17th, which is the Tuesday, we will be in Pretoria for the PBMR. They requested that we do a give them the time from 8:30 to 1:00 lunchtime to do the site visit on the PBMR, and then in the afternoon after lunch we'll do the oversight to Goedespoort, which is the engineering warehouse site of Transnet.
It's in Pretoria.
And then on the Wednesday, the 18th, in the morning we'll be flying to Lephalale in Limpopo. To Lephalale. Lephalale. Yeah. To visit the Mitupi and Matimba power stations of Eskom. And that will be the whole day.
Is Matimba still on the program?
Yeah, it's also there, yeah. And then I've requested that the committee would love to meet with the board and the management. So the indication they're giving me is that in the evening when we come back from Limpopo, that evening when we come back to go back to Johannesburg, we will be able to have an evening session with the management.
It's not the secretary that has asked. I have asked as chairperson the secretary to ask us to meet the board of ESCOM and the management of ESCOM, and they say that they can only meet us in the evening of the 18th. So members, you will have to give me feedback on this. Sorry?
Whereabouts?
In Johannesburg. In Megawatt Park.
Sunning Hill.
Yeah, Sunning Hill.
And then we'll be sleeping over in Johannesburg and only be leaving in the morning of Thursday, the 19th, to PE, where we're going to visit the... we'll first have the meeting, like arranged, and visit the Port of Nkuka and the Port Elizabeth Harbour in Port Elizabeth.
Members, your take on the progress. Thank you, sir. Yes, ma'am. Mrs. Bowman, Madam Haji, and Dr. Mangena.
I just want to have a bit of clarity on this, because we've got here a list that's going around asking us about transport and stuff there. So I'm not too sure. Are we going as a committee, starting in Joburg on Sunday night, and then we'll be together. I don't know what all the separate transport is about. If we could just have clarity, please.
Ma'am, normally weekends you go home, so you will indicate to us where you will be traveling from on Sunday. If you'll be traveling from your constituency, whether you'll be traveling from Cape Town, so this arrangement is about that. Okay. Madam Ajay? Okay. Dr. Mangena?
I was just asking whether this is workable in the on the 18th, we're sleeping in Johannesburg,
yeah.
And then 9 o'clock we are being briefed in Port Elizabeth. Is this really workable?
If we take the 6 o'clock flight, it's workable.
Yeah.
He's from PE.
Yeah, no, workable. I take the flight all the time.
I take it all the time too. I thought you were like me and him.
No.
Okay. We'll have to make it work. Otherwise, we will change the times of the briefing in PE if we want to leave a little bit early. I've heard you, Dr. Mangena. We'll look into that.
Maybe we must. I think I'm sure everybody here wants to meet with the board of ESCOM on the night before, Thursday night, and that they're going to meet with us that evening. And I'm sure you're not going to miss that meeting, Dr. Mangena. So that is the reason that we have to leave the next morning.
But we can reschedule the meeting in PE for an hourly so that we don't wake you up too early the next day after a heavy meeting.
But there aren't many flights either to PE. It's
I know.
One of those places, yeah. That.
But they are better than Kimberley still.
Yeah, better than Polokwane.
Yeah. Thank you.
Chairperson, I just want to indicate that on that Monday, the 16th, I will not be available. I have a very, very important meeting at Bishu. I can't cancel, but I'll catch you all on that Monday evening in Johannesburg.
It's okay. Thanks. Let's do all other things outside this meeting. Disa, we don't want, and researcher, this goes to you too. We don't want hiccups for this program. We hope everybody on the ground is expecting us, knows the time and all those things. Thank you. We're done with the session. It's over to you, Dr. Van Dijk.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Chairperson, through you, I just want to, in short, announce to the members of this committee that I did some investigation to the Transnet Second Defined Pension Benefit Fund as from last year when it was a real issue with the former Minister Alec Irwin and some other senior ministers in Cabinet. And then, of course, the Parliament went into recess for the coming election, and I continue with my research, and I put the presentation together for the Minister of Public Enterprises. I also put this whole issue on the strategic plan for this committee, as the chairperson already announced. And on the presentation to the Minister, I CC this document also to the members of this portfolio committee, because some of you are new in this portfolio committee. And just to give you an oversight of the Transnet Second Defined Pension Benefit Fund, history, the problems of the fund, and in essence, it boils down that these pensions of these members of that TSDBF only received, as determined by legislation, a 2% increase annually in their pensions since 1990, you know, and it's totally impossible to live with almost less than 1,000 rand. You will see in the submission, I referred to answers given to by the ministers to Parliament on the average salary of these people, and also Dr. Pillar is well aware of the medical problems also of these people. So what I would like to ask the chairperson is that I would appreciate if this committee can have a look during this course of interval before early next year to the contents of that submission. It's 19 typed pages, just to give you an oversight of the real problems, so that this committee has already taken a decision that we will look into the amendment of the legislation to come to the rescue of these people, because you know it is just human. We can't carry on, and Parliament or legislation is the only solution. There is no other ways that they can amend their benefits. It can only be done through Parliament. And I would urge you, please, Chairperson, and through you, for all the members of the committee to familiarise yourself with the content of the document, and then the Chair will decide generally when we will put it on the agenda.
They are familiarising themselves with the overview, not the oversight. And we won't go into the merits and demerits of that issue right now. I'll ask you to go and read it, and then we will engage that when we meet in January. Dr. Pillay and Ms. Bowman, we're not opening a discussion, but I'll hear you out still.
Sorry, Madam Chairperson. I just wanted to say to Dr. Fandal, and also we must include into this thing, because if we're going to restructure this, one of the things what we must understand is historically Transnet in its past, when it retired, when people of color were retired, they didn't have any follow-up benefits. So if one has to look at that, one has to look at also the other community that has been left out of the loop, because it's an important issue that we're addressing if we're addressing this thing. And I'm not saying that because it must consider both sides.
I won't ask you to go and bring, if you are not happy with the component that is not sufficiently covered, you will bring that dimension into
please.
This. And okay.
Please agree.
Mrs. Bowman?
Yes, Chairperson, I haven't seen the document, so if you could just forward to me. Thanks.
Chair, just with your permission, the committee clerk will email the document through to all of you from today, and you will see that the annexures is not attached. Only the chairperson received the thick document with all the annexures. But it is available on request. Once you want to have a look at any annexure, please feel free, and the committee clerk will make it available. Thank you.
He's a secretary. Thank you. This meeting is open. DPE, you're sitting there because of the presentation, because you need a laptop. Okay. Firstly, explain to us, why are you a Lone Ranger? Welcome, ma'am. You were not late because your presentation is only starting now. So you need to explain to us, why are you a Lone Ranger bringing this important presentation to Parliament?
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to all the honourable members. Well, Chairperson, this is one of the areas that I deal with in the department. And that's the reason why I was tasked with preparing the presentation and then giving it to the committee.
You know, I'm sure you have seen when you read media reports and watch TV that some committees very easily send people back if they feel undermined. It has never happened before in my 10 years as Member of Parliament that I have sat in a meeting where a single person presents a report before a committee of parliament. It's a starter. So we will see how you are doing with your presentation. So I want to lodge that complaint with the department. When we write to DPE, we expect the DG to come. And if she can't come or he can't come, we expect him to. We don't even know your designation. Are you a DDG, ma'am?
Yes.
But even when they sent a DDG, a DDG would come with another person or two or three. So you are in a very tight corner. And I don't want to fight with you. I'm fighting with the department. So we will see how you present to us. But I want to register my unhappiness from the chair. But you may carry on.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of the letter that we received, we were requested to give a briefing on the performance management of executive managers of state-owned enterprises. And then the subsequent clarification was that we should also look at the role of the board, the shareholder, and the SOEs itself. Okay, so I've structured the presentation along those lines.
And you're not well, huh? You are fluid.
No, yeah, it's the Cape Town weather.
Sorry. Did you introduce yourself, ma'am?
No, I didn't. My name is Ursula Figelepi. I'm responsible for legal and governance in the DPE. I'm not quite sure how to remove that the thing with the slideshow on it, because it's blocking the view.
Just go to the X and click the X.
Okay.
whilst you are doing that, yesterday you were seeking clarity of what we want you to put before us. So I think that those kind of questions should have come last week already. If we are unfair on you, just communicate much early, not an hour before the meeting, once seeking clarity of what is it exactly that we want you to put before us.
Okay. One of the reasons for that is because I was away last week traveling, so I did get other people to assist me, but I had to then put the final presentation together yesterday, and that's the only time I could get. So I've just got a few slides then outlining the relationship between the shareholder, the board, and the executive management of state-owned enterprises. And one of the things that I would like to highlight firstly about the state-owned enterprises, the nine that report to the department, is that all nine are incorporated as companies under South African company law, either under the Companies Act or under their founding legislation. So as companies, then there's a regime under the company law that governs the relationship between a shareholder, between a board, and the company itself. So as part of that, as the first statement that I have there is that in terms of company law, a company ordinarily would have two governing organs. The first one of those would be the shareholder, who's obviously the owner of the company and its assets. And that shareholder would then exercise its powers and governing duties in a general meeting, which is all prescribed and regulated by the Companies Act. And then the second one is the board of directors. Board of directors, I think members are aware that these are members, these are individuals who are appointed by the shareholders to represent the shareholder on the board of the company and be the custodian of the company itself. And as I stated, then in terms of company law, the distribution of powers between the shareholder and the board would be governed by the Companies Act, as well as the Articles of Association of the entity itself as a company. And Articles of Association would also be prescribed and regulated under the Companies Act. And the powers that are usually set out in the articles would generally include the ability for the company to hold general meetings. These are meetings that are called by the shareholder and can only be called by a shareholder, and to appoint board members, to remunerate the board members, both executive and non-executive. Also deals with the management and the control of a company. I think on this point that I will continue also discussing it a bit further. A chairperson earlier on, while we were concluding the Alexco presentation, one of the issues you raised was around executive boards. And I just want to state that in terms of best practice corporate governance principles, this is also under the King Codes. The recommendation has been that in a board that governs a company, it is preferred to have the majority of the board members be non-executive. By non-executive, that means it's individuals who are independent, who are external, who come from outside of the company. And then the executive board members would then be part of the executive management of the company. For example, with respect to the DPE, the executive board members that we would appoint onto the board would be the CEO and the CFO. And this would be by virtue of their office. So when a person is appointed as a CEO or a CFO of an SOE, then by virtue of that designation and that office they occupy, they then are appointed as executive directors onto the boards of the companies. So currently for the SOE that report to our department, the majority of the board members are non-executive, they are independent, and then the CEO and the CFO would be the two executive directors of the company. So as I stated there, then the shareholder would be responsible for the appointment and removal of directors. This is also governed by company law. And then the role of the board essentially is also to be the custodian of the company, and the board is then expected to act in the best interests of the company and the shareholder, because obviously if the company does well, then the shareholder benefits from that as well. Okay. And just additional pointers around the role of the board. The board has an oversight role. It reviews and monitors management conduct of the company affairs and the operations of the company. It also oversees the delivery and achievement of strategic business operations and financial goals, as well as other objectives of the company. And this is also, again, in line with the Companies Act and with the Articles of Association of the state of the company itself. And with respect to management, then the executive management, which on the board would be represented by the CEO and the CFO, is then accountable to the board, and the board in turn is then accountable to the shareholder. And this is the basis on which then a shareholder compact is concluded between the executive authority as representing the shareholder as well as the board. Because the shareholder compact is a performance agreement of the board, so it's concluded between the board and the shareholder, and it would set out things like the key performance areas for that SOE, as well as the key performance indicators, we colloquially call those targets, that the company is expected to reach, and that's what the board would be held accountable on. And just to also then state that executive management is appointed by the board, and that relationship actually is a relationship, is an employment relationship, because then the executive manager would be an employee of the company, and that would fall under employment law. Okay, this is just a slide showing. I'm going now into the performance management aspect of things, and this slide is just showing the cycle that performance management ordinarily would take in a lot of companies, that you would have a performance planning session where you would have the business plan, the strategy of the entity, the goals of the entity as well, and then that would be implemented, and as part of that implementation, this would include the performance of the executives and other employees of that company, and part of the implementation would include ongoing feedback and coaching around improving of performance, and then assessment of the performance, and the results would be would also be measured based on the goals and the strategy and the business plan of the entity itself. And this would be regular, the assessment would be held over regular periods. Okay, I apologize for the formatting of this slide. So with respect to the different SOE that report to the department, what we then did is we then also collated their performance management policies that each SOE has developed for the management of its executive. And for Alexco, what they stated is the objective is that the objective...
Can I just check with you, is objective the same as mandate?
Not in this instance, because this is the objective of the performance management policy itself. The mandate of the SOE would be in the founding legislation of the SOE and would also then be reproduced in the shareholder compact for each SOE, because that's the basis on which you then derive the performance areas and the performance indicators. I didn't go into a lot of discussion on the mandates because I wasn't aware that was something that you would want to have an extensive discussion on.
You see, the reason why I'm asking what the objective means and what the criteria, they speak to the SOE itself. And yet the agenda was about how you manage the performance of managers, of SOEs.
Yes, this is the objective and the criteria. These are the objectives of the performance management policies of the SOE for managing the performance of the executive managers. These are not the objectives and criteria of the mandate of the entity itself, but it's on how they manage their entities. Yeah. And I also, one thing I also do want to add is that when I was outlining that relationship, one thing I also would like to highlight is that as a shareholder, because your relationship is to oversee the performance of the board itself, that would be the point of contact, and those would be the individuals whose performance you would be managing and overseeing. So when it comes to executive management, that would be the board's responsibility, because those executive managers are responsible to the board itself. So ordinarily as a department, we wouldn't keep the performance management policies of the executive managers themselves.
Where will those be kept?
Within the SOE, because the board would be responsible for overseeing that function.
So it's a question that might go to the board. I'm struggling to, you must forgive me, I'm struggling to internalize the document because it only reached us this morning. There was no time to go through it. So bear with me if I interject and ask you questions as you proceed. I'm struggling to comprehend. So in terms of these objectives, every single, you say the objectives are policy matters. So every SOA has a different policy because your objectives are different here. Okay, proceed please.
So for Alexco, then the objective would be to assist the staff to enhance the performance so they can contribute maximally to the success of the SOE. And one thing I would also like to add is that with the objectives should also speak, because there should be an alignment between the goals of the entity and the performance of the managers themselves as well as of the board. So with respect to the criteria in terms of their policy, the criteria that they consider is results-oriented. They also look at behavioral competencies as well as technical competencies of the executive managers. And the payment or the remuneration of the staff would then be determined by the board, and such remuneration will be based on a rating on the scoring of the performance of that individual. And with respect to Danal...
Chairperson, you see, what is written here and what is presented to us is different.
Mm.
Because just today and in the presentation, the question came for Alexco was that, how is the board remunerated? And they said they have a remuneration committee, which remuneration committee may look at your objectives and the criteria, and then they say they make a recommendation to the department, and then the department then decides whether it approves it or not. Now, then to us, as we understood that document, and that was written in the annual statement, which you have approved, that goes into conflict with what we are saying here, where the board decides.
Mm.
So I am saying that a board here does not decide. The board makes a recommendation, and the department decides what is to pay. And that is why we always say we have oversight over the board, but the accounting people to us, the people accountable to us is the department and the minister. And so therefore, yeah, in this respect, I'm not going to ask the board, why did you pay yourself so much? Because it's not the board that paid itself, it's the department. Now, we have got two different stories here today, and I was surprised that if this is what is presented to us, why didn't the department collect Alexco when I asked the question about the remuneration?
You know what? We received this document this morning. Late afternoon, you were asking what exactly you must present. The disparity that Dr. Pile is raising. The fact that one SOE's objective is missing. I don't know if that is deliberate. You have not offered us an explanation why you have listed 8 SOEs and not listed ESCOM. So, if you were abroad and you did not understand, and the fact that you are alone here, if you do not understand what we are soliciting from you, which is something we have been speaking to the minister and the DPE over a period of time, the issues of the board and all these things. The fact that we received this document only in the morning and it's confusing us. I am really inclined to say we need another meeting where we give you better time to go and prepare, and we tell you exactly what you are looking for. And you don't come here alone. We come here with the senior leadership of the DPE, and we clearly outline to you, because the fact that you prepared only yesterday afternoon, and you have left out one SOE, and you are talking to the policies and not the processes and procedure of performance management, is a disjuncture of what we are looking for.
But,
change, not only as from even PMR.
Even PMR is missing. Now you should have done the decent thing to say that, ma'am, I'm putting before the committee, is it here? Yeah, I counted 8 SOEs. You conveniently left out ESCOM. I don't know why. So I'm checking with committee members. I'm inclined to give you enough time to go and prepare, and we'll communicate very clearly. And I regret that you only checked yesterday afternoon as to what exactly are we looking for. And this document is not helpful. It's not at all addressing what we're looking for. Mr. Peter?
Yes, Madam Chair. I think what we are trying to get at is the different SOEs, the pay that the people are receiving, how we are getting to that pay. We need an explanation in this board how we are getting there, and we're not seeing it here. We're only getting the guidelines, and then that document that they fall back on, which the department gave them, which they benchmarked the certain payments to the remuneration of them. I think that's important. It's not in here, and that is a question that is asked all the time.
If we want to add remuneration, we'll add it. So I'll sit with the committee, and together we'll write back to you in clear terms what we are looking for. But this communication we have sent to the department various times. So, if Mr. Fandeki is adding the remuneration, we were looking for procedures of performance management. Now, I think we are being unfair to you, and also the process is unfair to us. In that we did not have time to study the document, we are unfairly putting questions to you. By yesterday afternoon, you were not yet clear what we expect from you, which is not our fault because we communicated 10 days ago. So maybe we must create space to re-explain to you what we are looking for and give the department to go and prepare a decent document. Dr. Pile.
Madam Chair, maybe although we will write a letter, maybe we can explain. So it's sometimes when you write a letter, you don't understand what we need.
Yeah.
Maybe if we explain First thing first, when the Department of the DPE presented to this portfolio committee the annual statement, we raised our issues at that time to say what we would like to see happen. And of course, because we were looking at the annual statement at that time, we gave notice at that meeting that we would look at boards, how boards are selected, how boards are given a mandate, what mandate are given. Three, how do they enter into a shareholders agreement? What are the expected outcomes from that shareholders agreement? In terms of the shareholders agreement, how does the government of the day still protect its integrity and not just give over a total mandate to a board so that the board can go AWOL and do whatever it wants? The issue about when you are choosing directors for the boards, is there an evaluation done whether these people have got the time and the availability, and how many other boards are they serving on? We were very clear about that. They mustn't serve on too many boards. Then the issue came about is that if we give them a mandate, what are, in addition to the mandate, you will give them specific objectives to reach, which are actually measurable objectives. A mandate is a broad vision, and specific objectives are given to the board. And what are the objectives, and how does the shareholder, in your shareholders' agreement, have a clause to say how will the shareholder interact with the board to make sure that the objectives become very clearly made out to the board for them to reach those objectives? Then evaluation of the objectives, they're not done at the annual statement. How are you doing periodic evaluation of meeting of the objectives, and how is a business plan presented to you to meet those objectives? Then the issue of the business plans that are given to you, and who is evaluating the business plans to see that the objectives are being met. If an objective is not being met and the business plan is not being complied to in terms of timetables or financial output, what intervention measures are put in place at that time such that we don't come at the end of a financial statement and find a crisis at that point in time? going forward from here, one side to the thing is that remuneration of boards is a very sensitive issue, especially now where we have to cut the suit according to the cloth. And now we find people are getting paid salaries and then they're getting paid bonuses, and the salaries are actually already taken into consideration the difficulty in the job, and then you've got bonuses. We said that we would not like to see boards remunerating themselves. The final authority and the approval of that remuneration should come from the department. So mechanisms for the remuneration committee, the policies, guidelines, and how the remuneration committees work should be standard, and that with the vesting power remaining with the department at all times, the department is protected. And we want to see how you do that and what evaluations are you doing. And that must be in line with your periodic evaluation to keep your scorecard and a method of looking at it. Then we said to them that in producing the objectives and the financial statements, what Dr. Krunov said the last time, it will be nice to see what was the objective, what was the target, was it reached, and where it has been reached, where it is. Where it has failed also, we need it to be told to us that this has failed. So we need to see your mechanism of evaluation and your scorecard against the business plan. So you must have that. We don't want it more in the annual statement. We want it more from you to
Could
give
you
us...
Could you summarize, please?
Okay. I think she's got the idea what we wanted to see. But most of the thing is that, I mean, I thought that we did explain this thing.
We did, actually.
And it is there. Then we wanted to say also, look at the issue of, and it's very interesting if you look at Alex Corp. It was a cooperation. Corporacy. We made it into a company, a PTY limited company. Now we're saying in a developmental state, I don't care what King's Commission states. King's Commission is for a company listed on the stock exchange where you've got private shareholders buying money and there's a protection for them. Here you've got a public entity, so the King's Commission has different things. In terms of this, of having external board members, how does that go down with a developmental state?
In summary, I'll take you, let me take the members, then I'll summarize. Yes. Dr. Mangena, Dr. Kurano.
Now, after you've given the mandate, I thought I shouldn't complicate that. After you've given the mandate to the department, make some general comments that maybe will add to the understanding.
Yes, and I'll give space for members to say something. You see, you as DPE and the minister as a shareholder, in terms of the company act and in terms of regulation or whatever it is that you use, you give roles and mandates to boards, the first of which is to make sure that management performs of the SOEs. We want to interrogate those tools in terms of the mandate and the procedures that are used by the boards to make sure that managers perform of SOEs. Now, this is very murky. It's all over the show. It's not going to well. All these issues, if you summarize them, we are looking into, because it appears from a distance that, as you say, your objectives differ from SOE to SOE, and you say it's policy. But what tools are you giving the boss in terms of laws, regulations? You say to this boss, these are the procedures and that will ensure that this management will perform its tasks, which are the following. Members, over to you, please. Dr. Kuran, Dr. Mangena.
Chairperson, I think Dr. Pillai sums it up correctly, what we want from DPE. And this, it's a good document, but it's not addressing the issue that the committee asked for. Okay, it should be expanded. Secondly, all the points he mentioned is fine. But, you know, this morning we had Alex Corp Limited. It is different from Alex Corp Limited coming to the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises than Arms Corp going to the Portfolio Committee on Defense and presenting their annual report. It's not the same, because this crowd falls under the Companies Act. Arms Corp has got its own act, and it falls under the Defense Act. So maybe after all the points that Dr. Pillai has mentioned, we should also maybe apply our minds. What is the difference between an ordinary state entity like Arms Corps or the control board of that or whatever other portfolio committee are overseeing the state entities and the state-owned entities under the nine that you mentioned. But they cannot be handled the same, it seems, like an ordinary other state entity in another department. So we need not only to address the issues that we've mentioned in the mandate, but also make a comparison why it's different.
Just before I take Dr. Mangena, did you say that the CFO and the CEO are the only executives on the board, and the rest are non-executives, and nothing has changed so far? Okay, thanks. Dr. Mangena?
As I said, Chair, the remarks will be very general. This area of public entities is very difficult and complex, and it's a mess that will require that the executive and the legislature get together to sort it out, because there are literally dozens, if not hundreds, of public entities, and each one has got its own mandate given through the legislation that Parliament would have passed.
So it's like a bully.
Yeah. So each entity has got its own mandate enshrined in the legislation that created that entity. There is not a single entity that hasn't got an act that regulates how it functions and what its mandate will be and so on. And usually even the appointment of boards and so on is similarly outlined in the legislation. So in our case, for example, it is possible that we can go to all these entities and pull out the X, and they will tell us what needs to be done in there. Now, these entities are grouped according to size and according to the mandate. And therefore, there are issues of the boards and so forth are also embedded in the legislation. And then there is that benchmarking. For example, ESCOM is a huge entity, but it also competes with private companies. And so the remuneration and the boards and so on, what they will get, is related to that. You've got to benchmark it with that. And so it is difficult, for example, to complain about the salary of a CEO of ESCOM without going to that benchmarking exercise. But then there is a huge problem of remuneration across the board in the public sector in South Africa. Medical doctors, for example, getting less than a PA in a department.
Mm.
Municipal managers getting more than the president, and so it goes everywhere, and it's a huge problem that the way in which we are looking at it to resolve. It requires a lot of work that needs to be done in order to resolve these issues. And although we will find, if we deal with these things this way, we'll find that we are colliding with one another, but we are not really resolving the issues in a fundamental way.
Thanks. Are you done, Dr. Mangena?
I am.
That's why it is my opinion that the issue of remuneration needs attention on its own. If you collate it with the issues of the mandates and the roles, you are making the problem even more complex. So I would submit that if you want to deal with the remuneration, it's a separate discussion, and I agree with Dr. Mangena. Both this discussion needs the legislature together with the executive. But I'm sure you heard the issues that Dr. Pillay has raised. You heard the issues that Dr. Koranov has raised. You heard what Dr. Mangena says. From tomorrow, not a day before we meet, if you are not clear in terms of what we expect you to bring before us when we meet the next time, please communicate. It doesn't augur well that at 5 o'clock p.m. we get a call to say, but that gives us the impression that you don't take us seriously. Having said this,
this meeting is closed now, except that I would like to discuss with the members the fact that I've asked the committee section that there are too many outstanding minutes. They must bring all sets of minutes to the oversight visit so that we create some time during the oversight period to endorse minutes. Dr. Mangena?
Did you say that someone from Treasury officially attending the meeting?
Yes. No, they are present. But they are also interested in this aspect of the complex issues of remuneration, fulfillment of the mandate, performance management. So when I, outside the meeting, asked them, they said that they would like to hear the deliberations. So it looks like it's a concern that everybody is grappling with. And it goes back to your suggestion that we need to the legislature to meet all the role players to discuss these issues. They, if we don't carefully consider them, they will appear like they are personality clashes, yet there are systemic issues in the whole system of ownership of the state, remuneration packages, mandates that we give to the board. And we still think, in conclusion, that somewhere down the line, the money that we give to the board can be done away with by way of ensuring that the department carries some responsibility, as it was the case when the DG and the DDG for DPE acted without remuneration at a certain time during the Alexo process. But they wanted to hear our deliberations because it's an area of interest also for Treasury.
Is it possible to ask them to give their guidelines on the grouping classification of the entities and the remuneration of the role players?
You heard that, sir? We want that early in January. And we ask that documents should read members well in advance of meeting so that we read them and internalize them. I will be in liaison with Treasury also in this regard. Thank you. This brings us to the end of the meeting. Thank you, members. And thank you, DPE, as well. ANC members, can you remain for 2 minutes, please?
Yes, please.
Yeah.